Oh, it's a very happy Friday for fantasy baseball owners. If you have Chris Bryant, he's getting called up, according to ESPN Chicago. Welcome to the show, Adam Azer, Al Melchior, Scott White. We're going to have Heath Cummings on a little bit later. Friday, April 17th. And yeah, Chris Bryant, guys. I'm a little surprised he's coming up this early. But
are you?
I mean, this was the date my, that yeah. everybody circled.
Well, here's my thinking on it was I thought it would be too obvious. If they called him up, like, immediately, that it would be too obvious. But I think the Olt injury gives them the excuse to just go ahead and do it already. So welcome to the bigs, Chris Bryant.
Yeah. I think that was, I don't know if Chris Towers talked about that, but he said the same thing. Like, maybe they delayed a couple days just so, in case there's some kind of hearing about why he didn't make the roster to begin with, they could say, oh, you know, it wasn't just because of service time stuff, but whatever. It's irrelevant at this point.
They're just being totally transparent.
This is huge. This is huge. I think whenever a hyped prospect gets called up, obviously there's a lot of hype. He's a hyped prospect, and so it's often a good time to go ahead and shop them and you know, see if somebody is willing to go above and beyond for an unproven commodity. But in Bryant's case, I don't know, like, you have to get such a high-end player for him that I don't know if it's realistic. At third base, I think Donaldson and Arenado are the only players I'd take for him. You know, maybe you could use it to buy low on a slow starting Jose Bautista or Edwin Encarnacion, but I think the most likely scenario for Bryant is he runs away with the NL Rookie of the Year, probably gets some MVP votes, and just has a monster season. So I'm not that motivated to sell on him.
Wow. All right. Al, what do you think? What are your expectations for Chris Bryant?
Yeah, I think he's going to be a must-start guy going forward. I have some question about the batting average, but yeah, not enough for me to value him any less than at the level that Scott was describing, where I'd go for a very high-end, slow starter. Another name that just popped in my head when Scott was running through those scenarios is Clayton Kershaw, because I've actually seen some evidence on Twitter that he might be had for the right price because of his slow start.
How about a guy like Madison Bumgarner? Would you trade Chris Bryant for Madison Bumgarner? I would do that in a second.
I think I would.
It might depend to some degree who I already had at third base. I think Bryant's going to perform at a third round level from here forward, though, which is about what Bumgarner or better. I think, like, that's kind of the conservative estimate for Bryant, a third round level.
Do you remember what George Springer was doing in the minors before he got called up last year? Was he awesome?
Oh yeah, he was.
So are there Springer concerns? Because here's what Springer did in his rookie season. I know you guys know, but I'll just remind everyone. He hit .231 with 20 home runs, and he only stole 5 bases, and he got off to an absolutely dreadful start. And I'm not talking about 2015, by the way. 2014 got off to a really bad start when he got called up. And then, you know, Bryce Harper, I'll give you his rookie numbers. Bryce Harper hit .270, .340 on base, .477 slugging. That's a really good rookie season. I'm not sure that's third round good, but very good.
Well, and he was also younger than Bryant
is now.
Yeah,
he was 19, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess bringing back to Springer here, why are you guys, why are you so confident, especially you, Scott, that Bryant's going to be, you know, that good?
Well, I just think his level of preparedness is so evident. I mean, even from the spring, I mean, obviously, nobody could not just get him out, nobody could allow a single to him in spring training, you know?
Yeah.
And just based on, I think it was a little more evident from the scouting reports that Springer's a very good player, but there are some flaws here that, you know, may lead to some speed bumps early in his career. When Bryant, it doesn't seem like that's the case. It seems like, from everything I read, there hasn't been a prospect as prepared for this since like Mike Trout or maybe even before that, because Trout, you'll remember when he got called up, he wasn't showing the kind of power he ultimately ended up having. Bryant clearly is. So I just think it's a combination of what we saw in spring training and what we've been hearing all this time leading up to his promotion.
Did you guys enjoy your quasi day off yesterday with only six games on the schedule?
It made things gave me a little more room to breathe. So yeah, was
pay
nice.
Some bills or catch up on the lawn or something like that. Do you guys have lawns?
Or do you have one. I live in a townhouse community, so I have all the benefits of a lawn with none of the responsibility to take care of it.
That's good. I miss lawns. Well, we do have some stuff to talk about from yesterday. And we got fantasy leaders. We're going to look at the top six at four different positions so far through about 2 weeks of the season. And we'll tell you what we think. We got a lot of injuries to update you on. Jose Reyes, Evan Longoria, Carlos Gomez, he's on the DL. So we'll fill you in on all of that. We got some player debates coming up a little bit later. Heath's coming in to talk daily fantasy later on in the show. And emails and tweets. Email us fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Fun Friday show begins with our stat of the day, and it's about Lucas Duda, who has multi-extra base hits in three straight games. Duda is the first Met to do that since Carlos Beltran did it in 2006. Duda's only got one home run so far, but he's batting .395 with six doubles and so far 4-for-8 against lefties, and he hit .180 against lefties last year. So your thoughts on Duda, who, when we look at the leaderboard, Lucas Duda is the sixth best first baseman in points leagues right now.
Scott and I were just talking about whether or not you start him this week, maybe in a shallow league. Scott, you got an email from somebody. It sounds like they're in kind of a shallow league where they have a very stacked lineup.
Well, they have to sit with Bryant, Carlos Santana, and Duda next week.
And Scott, it sounded like was leaning Santana. I was actually leaning Duda. So, I mean, if you like to play the hot hand, then I could see why you would prefer to keep Duda in the lineup. But at some point, I just do think he's going to cool off, and the power will be there. But I think eventually you'll probably see a lot more strikeouts than you have so far.
He's been going the other way a lot so far this season. That was something Heath pointed out in the video updates we do for Duda yesterday when he had another good game. So I think he's close to being a must-start anyway, just based on what he did last year, even if he hadn't gotten off to this hot start. But maybe there's the potential for him to become a little more well-rounded of a hitter here. He hasn't struck out a lot so far this season either.
He hasn't walked a lot either. I should look at the pitches per plate appearance and see if he's been more aggressive.
Two walks, six strikeouts so far for Lucas Duda. Tweet of the day comes from Craig Betts. Are you guys going to start giving Lorenzo Cain some props? He had another great day on Thursday. And yeah, Lorenzo Cain's been pretty awesome. He's batting .429 with two home runs. He batted .339 in the first 33 games of 2014, FYI. But what do you think of Cain right now?
Well, Craig's just trying to draw attention away from his cousin Mookie with this Lorenzo Cain question. But the part about Cain's season I'm finding intriguing so far is the power, because you know, last year he was a high BABIP hitter. He's even higher so far this year, but we see that with small samples all the time at the beginning of the season or at any part of the season. But this is somebody who did have one power breakout year in the minors, and then we've never really seen it since. And I don't think Cain is so old that we could completely write off the possibility that this is something he might be able to sustain.
29.
We're not talking 30 homer power, though, obviously.
No.
We're talking double-digit home runs power. I feel like the upside for Cain is limited to, like, you know, best-case scenario for Cain, I'm thinking, is, like, Starling Marte, which is obviously good. It's probably a must-start player. But a guy with some modest power could hit for a high average, not going to walk a lot, though he's already, like, I think, one-fifth of the way to last year's walks, so maybe that changes as he becomes more of a threat. Not willing to say that this early in the season, though. I would say he's must-own based on the way he started the year, but it's It's not like he's a slam dunk that he's going to stay that valuable all season.
Al, I think you call Lorenzo Cain a sell high.
Yeah, and I'll stick with that. Part of what is powering both the doubles rate that we're seeing early on and the high batting average is a ridiculously high line drive rate. And again, that's a really variable stat. So, like I said, there's some evidence in his past that maybe there could be an uptick in power. But I don't even think that's necessarily enough to make him a must-start player. So
all right.
I do think if somebody's valuing him as such, that's a good time to trade him.
Let's do some comparisons with Lorenzo Cain. Lorenzo Cain or Will Myers?
Cain.
Rest of season, I'll go Myers.
Lorenzo Cain or Steven Souza?
Souza.
I'll go Cain there, too.
Abisail Garcia or Lorenzo Cain?
I think we're going to be 3-for-3 because I'm going to say Garcia.
Yeah, I'll say Cain.
Oh, okay.
I don't like being the high guy on Cain. This feels wrong.
Well, you are. You are, sir.
I just don't feel like there's as much reason to be high on those guys. I like Souza's upside, too. Cain's 90-something percent owned now, and Souza's 60-something percent owned. So it just seems like Cain's got to be the guy you own over Souza now, right?
Why? Why? Look, if you don't think that's right, then, you know, people could be wrong.
Yeah, but you can probably wait on Souza.
Possibly. I mean, I just picked him up in our podcast league.
The only reason the scenarios even make sense is I have Cain, Souza sitting on waivers. You drop Cain, Cain's definitely getting picked up. Maybe Souza could stay out there a little longer.
Well, I will add this. If you own Cain and you're looking to make a trade, okay, it'd be very, very rare to I'll trade you Cain for Souza. But I'll trade you Cain and Sonny Gray for Souza and Madison Bumgarner. You know, something like that.
Yeah, I would do that, but for Bumgarner, that's worth doing.
But I think there's an impact to hearing you guys say, oh, I like Souza better than Cain. So if you're the Cain owner, you make a trade, maybe you find the Souza owner, you put some more in the package, you get a good outfielder back. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I think... If you know, I feel like Souza has more upside than Cain. I'll put it that way. But as things stand now, I think Cain is more valuable than Souza. It could change next week, you know. But as things stand today, I think Cain is more valuable than Souza.
FanDuel, reminding everyone, FanDuel hosts one-day fantasy contests. Go to the website right now. Use our offer code CBS. You know we play FanDuel every day. Even yesterday when we said, maybe you don't want to play today. I played FanDuel. I don't want to talk about the results, though. But FanDuel, they're going to match your first deposit dollar for dollar up to $200. It gets earned as you play. So that's $200 that gets earned as you play. If you use the offer code CBS, go to FanDuel.com. And later on, Heath Cummings will come on to talk daily fantasy, tell you who to put in your lineup. Carlos Gomez is on the DL with a hamstring injury. So Gerardo Parra should get some at-bats now. Could be a good DFS guy if you need a cheap outfielder. Jose Reyes, he's going to miss the weekend most likely. He left with soreness in his ribs, and that's been bothering him for a little while, and now he's been struggling to hit left-handed. We could see Ryan Goins and Steve Tolleson replacing him in Toronto. Evan Longoria was hit by a pitch last night. He thinks he'll be fine. He was hit on the hip. He expects to play today at the Yankees. Seattle manager Lloyd McClendon is sticking with Fernando Rodney, and Danny Salazar will start Saturday for Cleveland at Minnesota as the Indians shuffle their rotation with Carlos Carrasco being hit by the comebacker. Carrasco's going to start on Monday, and Salazar's going Saturday.
That's really interesting because they could have easily gone with Zach McAllister, right? He had a long relief appearance in Carrasco's start, so he would have been lined up for this turn.
That was the speculation.
But I thought it was McAllister was possibly going to pitch Sunday because that was originally Carrasco's turn.
Okay, so they could pitch. I think it's House then, maybe on Saturday. But I just know whatever, because you're right. There was that open spot, and I think they shuffled things around. But the speculation was that McAllister was the most likely pitcher to fill that opening. And what makes it, I think, doubly interesting is that Terry Francona said this isn't necessarily one and done.
Ooh,
yeah.
Salazar.
But yeah, his first start in the minors was great. I mean, I don't think he walked anybody.
Maybe
one walk or something. It was a good start for him, though.
So do you guys want to beat the rush and pick him up now? Danny Salazar?
I haven't done it yet. I've sure got Salazar fatigue, to be honest with you.
I don't blame
you. I threw
it
too many times.
I mean, I dropped like I don't think I'd drop McAllister for him. So I obviously wouldn't drop like Jimmy Nelson or any of those other guys you picked up to start the year for him.
And I think it's a tweener kind of situation where, I mean, my focus in my 12-team leagues has been on getting the two-star pitchers for next week because we finally have a pretty good crop of them this week to choose from. I'm not really interested in picking up a one-star pitcher, and Salazar could be a zero-star pitcher next week. So unless I just had some deadwood on the roster that I wanted to get rid of and there wasn't a two-star pitcher I wanted out there, and that's going to be unlikely because I don't even have room to get all the two-star pitchers that I want for next week. So I basically say there's no room in my 12-team leagues for Salazar right now. And then in the deeper leagues, Salazar's typically owned already.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Thursday's standouts before we break down our leaderboard in fantasy baseball. Also, Al and Scott are going to have the Week 3 advice for you in a little bit. Ender Inciarte, guys, he's 22% owned. Interesting player right now. The Diamondbacks really like him. Inciarte's batting .405. Seems to be a stolen base threat. He's got two steals and three attempts. And after the All-Star break last year, Inciarte hit .306 with 13 steals in 64 games, scored 32 runs, and he's batting leadoff. And it looks like he's kind of entrenched there. What do you guys think about Ender Inciarte, 22% owned?
I take this more as bad news for David Peralta than good news for fantasy owners, because I do like Peralta more, I think. Certainly in terms of power, he brings more to the table. But Inciarte, since he does seem to have the role locked up, at least until there's a cold stretch at some point, I guess. Yeah, I mean, he could steal bases, and obviously that's valuable in Roto. He's somebody I'd probably value on like the Anthony Ghost level right now.
How about this, Deaza or Inciarte? Similar situations there.
Diaz for me, because I actually both counts. I think in terms of per game production, he's better, and I think he's got a more stable situation.
Are you guys worried about either Madison Bumgarner, who apparently is working through some mechanical issues, or Cole Hamels? The two of them are off to slow starts. Bumgarner and Hamels.
Not really. And Hamels, I think I mentioned this maybe after the last start, has actually been a slow starter in a lot of seasons. So I don't see any particular reason to think he won't rebound. And
His last start was actually the great one. He two-hit somebody over seven innings. First one, he allowed four home runs. So two bad starts with a great start sandwiched in between. That's better. That's actually better than he has started some of the last few years.
Guys, I'm going to continue a conversation that we had yesterday. I think this is a good weekend to try to buy low on some of these stud pitchers. I'm going to look at Strasburg, Bumgarner, and Hamels, and I'm going to make a lot of offers for these guys. The track records are too good for me. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but I think this is a really good time to buy low on some struggling guys. And maybe it wouldn't happen in our leagues, but it happens all the time. We see the emails and the tweets all the time. People give up really easily, really early on a lot of players.
Yeah, I would actually lump John Lester in that group too.
Yeah, and Al said Samardzija yesterday as well. So good time to do it. How about Springer? Would you guys buy low on Springer?
If I didn't own him in every league already, yes.
You're confident he's going to bounce back, Al?
Yeah, I am.
John Lackey, Archie Bradley, Chris Archer had good starts yesterday to varying degrees. Archer was amazing. And you know, doing all this DFS research, I've stumbled across some things that I found interesting, like Chris Archer, very good history at Toronto. So he had a really good start yesterday, 11 strikeouts and 7 scoreless innings, 2 hits, 2 walks. Maybe you look at it and say, well, he's always good in Toronto. Obviously we like him. And then John Lackey, we know good home road splits, better at home. And Archie Bradley was pretty good at San Francisco. Any thoughts on those three guys?
Well, Bradley, I find intriguing. Archer, we've seen highs and lows from him, so I'm not really sure what to make of him. Lackey, it was very good at Busch last year, so I could see that trend continuing. But Bradley, I think I was very low on him compared to just about everybody after his spring performance, and he's getting tons of ground balls, And so I haven't done the research behind that to see if maybe there's been a change in his arsenal or in something mechanical with him. It could be matchup driven, at least with this last one against the Giants, because the Giants are currently, I think, fourth among teams in ground ball percentage by their hitters. And that just strikes me as a lineup that would probably generate a lot of ground balls. But
So he wasn't a ground ball pitcher in the minors, Bradley?
No, pretty neutral.
Man, well, you know, the Giants are terrible right now. That is a lousy team. Seven in a row they've lost, I think, and kind of a bad lineup. He walked four, Bradley, in his first start. He walked two last night.
Yeah. Of the three, the one I'm least interested in is Lackey, which I mean, he has his uses, but he's kind of Chris Tillman-ish in 12-team leagues. I see him being on and off the waiver wire most of the year.
Archer had a meh first start. His last two have been really good. Do you guys think Archer is taking the next step, breaking out?
I'd bet against it at this point, because like Al said, we've seen flashes of this in the past. But at the same time, he's a pretty good pitcher who he already is. So I would use him as a piece to get Cole Hamels or any of those other deals we talked about earlier.
Must start, Chris Archer?
No.
No? Okay.
No.
Yeah, streamer.
Any other standouts from yesterday before we dive into the fantasy leaderboard?
Yeah, thin schedule.
Yeah.
I left my notes somewhere.
Oh, that's
probably
all right.
On my desk at home.
I left my notes. I printed the wrong day's notes, so that was a rough start to the podcast, so I'm using my computer.
That's what happens when there's only six games. Our whole routine gets thrown off.
Oh, hey, I know there wasn't music on the podcast yesterday. That's because my computer broke my laptop, but it was resurrected somehow last night. It's back. It's in business, and I will be able to edit like a normal person today.
Isn't that always such a relief? Like, you think you have a computer problem, and you're like, oh my gosh, how am I going to figure this out? And then the next time you go to it, it's working fine, and it never happens again.
I gave it to the IT department, and the computer guy here, Jay, he's like, yeah, your computer's broken. I'm going to have to back up your files. What do you want? I'm like, just save all my documents. And he said, you should put in a ticket to order a new laptop. And then at like 5 o'clock, he emailed me. He was like, hey, it's back! So that was a nice little surprise. Fantasy leaders. I got the top six first baseman in points leagues, top six second baseman in roto, top six third baseman in points, top six shortstops in roto. We begin with first base in points leagues. Adrian Gonzalez, Paul Goldschmidt, Joey Votto, Miguel Cabrera, Kendrys Morales, Lucas Duda. Quick thoughts.
Well, the one of these things that is clearly not like the others for me is Kendrys Morales. And I have to say I'm not buying because, first of all, last year he actually started off initially pretty well and it was miserable. And I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen again this year. But even if you just look at what Morales' upside is, basically before he had all those injuries, he was a decent power guy, but nothing on the level that we're seeing early on. So,
yeah,
I don't
buy him to this extent either, but I do buy that last year was a lost year because of the late start, and he's back to being a fringe mixed league guy or in roto leagues with a corner infield spot, probably must own.
Yeah. All right, any more thoughts on first base, or are you ready for second base? I think first base kind of big names.
We talked about Duda.
Yeah.
I expected a little bit of regression, but
Is it safe to say Votto's back? I know we both moved him up to sixth in our first base rankings, so I feel like he's back.
I do too.
Yeah.
Well, then how about second baseman in roto leagues? Number one is D. Gordon. He's off to a great start. Devin, very surprised he got thrown out by Travis d'Arnaud last night, by the way. Devin Travis, number two. Ian Kinsler, number three. Every year, DJ LeMahieu does something good for a little bit, and he's number four right now. Dustin Pedroia is number five, and Tim Beckham, he is the first Ray rookie to hit two pinch hit home runs in their history as in his rookie season. He's number six. So we've got Devin Travis two, LeMahieu four, Tim Beckham six in roto right now.
Tim Beckham, How many at-bats does he have?
Oh, he's playing a lot.
He's got two pinch-hit home runs, so he doesn't need that many at-bats.
I haven't
He's got 25 plate appearances, so I mean...
He's never even registered for me in a box score.
Well, it's... it's actually not that different from when Madden was there. They got Forsythe and Beckham's another guy who could play both middle infield spots. And so, there's been a bit of a rotation at second base.
Just in case somebody doesn't know who Beckham is, he was the first overall pick in the 2008 draft, but then was a complete dud in the minors and I think missed all of last season with an injury of some kind.
I mean, he's never hit more than, it looks like, 7 home runs. I'm looking at individual stops in the minor league, in his minor league track record, not whole seasons. He's never hit more than 7 home runs at any one stop. And that might actually be, okay, that season he had a total of 16. So that was 2011, and that was his big power year.
Yeah. But he is 25 with a pedigree. I mean, we got to see more playing time, but it's interesting that he's made more of an impact than I thought so far. The other guy on this list who I don't see being anywhere near the top 6 is DJ LeMahieu, who it's pretty much all batting average at this point, and clearly unsustainable batting average. I just don't think there's enough else there for him to be valued higher than like Joe Panic level at season's end.
I like that.
Devin
Panic
Travis,
level.
Though.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, I don't know about top 6, but I wouldn't fall out of my chair if he was a top 10 second baseman at season's end. I think the skill set is very similar to Colton Wong, who we were hyping to that level coming in. So, you know, maybe he out-Wongs Wong.
Like that verb. Just to go back to Beckham real quick, I think I said 16 home runs. I was including his AFL stats, so actually it was 12 that year. So, I mean, he's never really had a big power year. Pedroia, off to a good power start, but if I remember my Hit Tracker Online stats correctly, I don't think he's got 3 home runs, and I don't think any of them would have gone out in more than 16 of the 30 parks.
Okay.
So I'm a little suspicious. I guess
that's kind of Pedroia. He's all like, his home runs are all like all height and no distance. Like that's, I mean, he can do that playing half his games at Fenway Park.
Well, it'd be interesting to go back and look and see, like what the short distance ratios were. Because most players, it's about 1/3 of their home runs are what that website refers to as just enoughs. But, I'm just not all on board with Pedroia as like a 15 home run guy.
Pedroia or Kipnis rest of season?
Yeah, I'm still going Kipnis.
I will too. Yeah. All but right. They're right next to each other, I think, in my rankings.
All right, let's pick it up a little bit. I want to make sure we have some time for emails. Top 6 third baseman in points leagues: Nolan Arenado, Mike Moustakas, Xander Bogaerts, Matt Carpenter, Todd Frazier, and Ryan Zimmerman.
Ryan Zimmerman, who's still batting like 150.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he's there.
I always take that as a good sign when a player's not hitting his best and still is productive in fantasy, because you know he's going to be a better hitter than that. I guess the two surprises here are Moustakas and Bogaerts. I don't want to say I'm buying Moustakas completely, but I'm keeping my mind open with him because he is going to the opposite field a lot more than he ever has. I always found it bizarre that he didn't hit for a higher average for as little as he strikes out. I assume defensive positioning had a lot to do with that. So if he's flipping the script here,
I'm sorry, Scott. But a combination of defensive positioning and also perennially one of the leaders in a bad way in pop-out rate, like a 15% rate, which is atrocious. So,
if he has more of an up-the-middle approach, though, I would think that would be reduced, too.
Yeah.
I think Moustakas is to the point where he's worth owning just to see where it goes.
excuse me. Top 6 shortstops in roto leagues. God, it sounded like I was choking to death there. Sorry about that.
You all right?
I'm fine. Top 6 shortstops in roto leagues: Hanley Ramirez, Jose Iglesias, Xander Bogaerts, Jed Lowrie, Alcides Escobar, and Ben Zobrist. Hanley Iglesias, Bogarts, Lowry, Escobar, and Zobrist. This is the weirdest list so far.
Tulo.
Yeah, no Tulo. Zobrist, I was shocked. He's got a lot of runs scored. I think he has 8 runs scored. You guys don't. I don't think we're going to get to the player debates since we're already at 30 minutes, but you guys don't agree on Xander Bogarts necessarily. Scott has Bogarts a lot higher in the rankings, both at short and third, than Al. So do you guys want to tackle that one?
Yeah, well, you know, Scott, I think offline you'd made a comment that I thought was really apropos, that a lot of the players that we disagree on are more a reflection of risk aversion, our levels of risk aversion,
mm-hmm.
Which my level's much higher. So I don't doubt Bogart's upside or his ability to be a top shortstop or third baseman this year. I just think the probability of it happening is maybe lower than what Scott perceives, or maybe we perceive the same probability and Scott's just willing to gamble on it more. Maybe that's it. So that's just a way of saying, for me to say, I'm not surprised to see him show up on a list like this, especially less than with a 2-week period.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, I think at shortstop it's a lot easier to take that risk because I have an 8th, I think, which seems high, but who's behind him? I guess Jimmy Rollins and Alexi Ramirez. You know, you could convince me to rank them ahead of him, but not really anybody beyond that. So I think just the fact that he's clearly not hurting you now, you just ride it out with him and. Maybe he's even a top 5 shortstop in the end.
Yeah, and I really became aware of shortstop where you really have a conundrum about how to value players because there's such bunchiness after a very small elite. And putting Marcus Semien into my shortstop rankings yesterday because now he is shortstop eligible.
Yeah.
And it really a similar conundrum with him that I have with Bogarts, which is, you know, I thought in terms of upside, I might put him like 6th.
Yeah.
That just didn't feel right to me. You know, I just felt like the mean expectation I have for Semien was more like, I think I put him like 11th instead.
Well, somebody who offers, I think I'd probably rank him behind Rollins and Ramirez. So a couple spots between him and Bogarts. But as somebody offers you Alexi Ramirez for Semien today, you're taking it or are you really thinking about that?
No, I'm not taking it, but this is a case where as the Semien owner, which I am in many leagues, and I've experienced with other players this year too, that where I get an offer that's more than fair, but I drafted the player because I like the player and I like the player's upside.
Yeah.
I want to play it out.
I've noticed that too. I actually got a very interesting buy low opportunity on one of the pitchers we were talking about earlier. But it was like giving up Mookie Betts and a pitcher who I really like.
Oh, you're talking about Strasburg in our podcast league, aren't you?
Maybe.
Yeah. Because I made some offers for Strasburg too, but was it JP? Is that who's got Strasburg, I think?
Well, he made the offer to me.
Yeah, but he wants the moon. He wants a lot of... He wants like a stud outfielder.
Well,
and a pitcher.
The stud outfielder he was asking for me was Mookie Betts.
Not stud,
not established as a stud outfielder yet.
Right, he wanted JD Martinez from me, not stud outfielder. But, all right, well, I see what you're up to there, Strasburg owner.
Well, my point is, that's a trade I would, in a vacuum, I'd probably advise someone else to take. But I don't want to. And I feel like I'm getting, I guess I've kind of always been this way, but maybe even more so. Even if there's a trade on the table that I feel like I'm probably winning, but I'm just not all on board accepting it. I'm more often going to decline it than not.
Yeah.
Which means I very rarely accept trades proposed to me. Usually I'm the one proposing them. But I'm okay with that. I'd rather not have the regret of I should have known better than to do that later. A great example of me taking a trade that I feel like I had to because of value, but I wasn't in love with that in the podcast league last year between me and you, Braun and Carlos Gomez. I think you wanted Carlos Gomez and somebody else, not that consequential for me, for Braun. And I sat on it for like a week.
Oh, no, wait. I think this is slightly different than the way it went down. I had I had Braun, you had Gomez.
Right.
And you knew that I wanted to make the trade. I wanted to have Gomez. And yet you still, even though you had Braun ranked higher than Gomez, you, Scott, were still trying to get a second player out of me. And
well,
I
that's what I'm saying, because I wasn't totally thrilled with the deal, even though in a vacuum, I would say I was winning the deal. I just wasn't completely on board with it. So I kept trying to, I tried to make a way that would make me completely on board with it.
Mm-hmm.
I eventually gave in and just took the deal and obviously regretted it in the end.
I stood my ground.
I'm sorry. But just to complete the thought that I started with Simeon and Bogarts and players of that nature. So if I've drafted those players and I'm pretty excited about playing out the possibility of them reaching the upside. Now, if I'm the Alexi Ramirez owner, I'm not going out looking for Bogarts or Simeon because I have them ranked higher than both. And there might be two or three other players on my roster that I'm kind of taking a gamble with. So I'm going, so I'd say probably 9 times out of 10, at least I'm going the safe route with the safe players I've already drafted, if that's clear.
All right, Scott, give it to us. What was the Strasburg trade?
I'm not going to reveal that.
Why?
Because I'm not completely sure. I'm not going back to it at some point.
That's okay. All right, fine. Oh, when you make the trade, we'll talk about it. By the way, I better make some offers before Scott gets another round. I better make some offers quickly before Scott has another opportunity. All right, Dominic Brown, he's approaching a return. James Loney could return April 22nd when he's eligible to come off the DL. The Yankees are interested in second base prospect Jose Peraza, according to the New York Post. That's Braves second base prospect Jose Peraza. They obviously need a second baseman. Brett Gardner has a bone bruise in his wrist. He hopes to play today. Tim Beckham, we mentioned him, and Christian Yelich returned to the Miami lineup. Quick question about Mike Fiers. Any concerns about the slow start, guys?
There's some concerns, yeah, because he's not proven, and he's obviously had very up and down track record. But I think it's encouraging that he hasn't gotten crushed. He's allowed one home run between the two starts. That's good to see from him. The strikeout's still more than one per inning. And in this particular start, I think he only allowed 3 of the 7 hits before the sixth inning.
3 singles.
Yeah. So he was a guy who missed some time in spring training with a shoulder issue. Maybe he's just not quite as built up as he needs to be at this point.
Dropper stash Aaron Sanchez, 42% owned.
I'm going stash in a points league where I can use him as a sparp.
Yep.
Addison Reed struggled, first blown save of many this season. if you're speculating on one guy in the Arizona bullpen that's not Addison Reed, who is it?
I had been going Evan Marshall. In fact, I drafted him in NL only, Evan Marshall. Scott, I don't know if it was you, but somebody at some point mentioned Daniel Hudson as a close
candidate.
Chris
Towers.
Yeah, I was about to mention him if that makes you feel any better.
Marshall hasn't exactly put his best foot forward
hasn't.
And Hudson has. He's not striking anybody out, but he pitched the eighth yesterday, and in the, I don't remember what the score was, but I know the Giants tied it in the ninth off Reed, so I think Hudson played the setup role yesterday, for what that's worth.
Yeah. So for the time being, I'm still looking to Marshall. It's early, but it definitely pays to kind of scan what's going on in that bullpen, especially if Marshall continues to struggle.
I'm going to look at the most added list here, and you guys tell me who stands out to you, and then you can tell us who to add for Fantasy Week 3. Joe Kelly is the most added. I should probably pull up the two-star pitchers, but he's not a two-star pitcher next week, Joe Kelly, is he?
He is not.
So, yeah, one-star guy, but he's most added. He starts today against Baltimore. Mark Canha, number 2. Kevin Kiermaier, number 3. Ubaldo Jimenez, 4. Brandon Morrow, 5. Adam Ottavino, 6. Joe Kelly, Mark Canha, Kevin Kiermaier, Ubaldo Jimenez, Brandon Morrow, and Adam Ottavino. Other than Ottavino, I've actually added 3 of these guys, Kelly, Jimenez, and Morrow, and I could see all of those guys being on the most drop list at some point.
Especially Morrow, because his next start is in Colorado.
Yeah, right. He's a two-star guy, Al. So one's at Colorado, one's against the Dodgers, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You sitting him next week?
Absolutely.
But don't drop him if he has a bad start.
If you've got him, don't drop him because he's been good so far, but I just think he's risky next week. And those are both pretty tough matchups, actually.
All right, who's your favorite pitcher, guys? Kelly, Jimenez, and Morrow.
For Jimenez, for me, it's Jimenez because I feel like the ceiling is the highest, and he's achieved that ceiling the most recently of these three. I don't even know that Kelly has much of a ceiling. It surprises me that he's the most owned of the three.
Well, he's been very good so far, and look, for me, it's Jimenez too. Kelly's somebody that I'm watching just to see if he can sustain what he's done, but Jimenez is maddeningly inconsistent as he's been. He has had several extended stretches.
It's only been one start for Kelly.
Yeah, one
right?
start.
He makes a second today
against Ubaldo.
Yeah,
pretty sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, one start at the Yankees. Very good start. All right, yeah. Mark Canna or Kevin Kiermaier? Who do you like?
Kiermaier.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Not to say Canna isn't on my radar at all. I think particularly since he's going to be first base eligible soon and could be a corner infield option, Roto owners should pay attention to him. But Kiermaier, I think, has some interesting upside for all leagues.
Mike Moustakas, Alex Avila, Kendrys Morales, Stephen Vogt, DJ LeMahieu, Chris Heston, Jose Iglesias, Lorenzo Cain, Edinson Volquez, Anthony DeSclafani. We've really talked about a lot of these guys.
And a lot of them are highly owned. I mean, they've gone from being, 40-ish percent owned to being guys that you're going to have a very hard time getting now.
Yeah. All right. So we pretty much covered that. Guys, I want to give you some time to talk about who to start and who to sit in Fantasy Week 3 if you want to take a few minutes. Scott, give us some hitter advice for Fantasy Week 3.
All right. Well, one guy we talked a little bit earlier about is Steven Souza. It's not like the Rays have especially good matchups, but I'm finding few teams have bad matchups this week. And three lefties, he hit both of his home runs on lefties. I just feel like he's heating up here, and you need to get him in your lineup. Kind of a deeper guy I like is Jonathan Scope. Also because of how hot he is, but the Orioles have the fifth best matchups in a week where, that really means something because there's so many good matchups for hitters. The Rockies are at home all week. It's the first time we've seen that this year, and they face zero left-handers. That's good news for both Justin Morneau and Charlie Blackmon, who you may have soured on based on his slow start. Definitely need to get him active again. Teams matchups that I really like. Padres are number one, and they face four lefties. That's great news for Derek Norris. Tough to keep my Norris's straight.
Jed Jerko
hasn't been playing.
I know.
Yeah, and I don't remember him being particularly good against lefties anyway.
Oh, he's not good against anyone lately.
Yeah, that's true. I think there was another Padre that was good for, but not finding it right now. Okay, so other good matchups. I like the Braves. I like the Royals, who face four lefties. Maybe don't like it for Mike Moustakas for that reason. Maybe play it safe with him until he proves he can hit lefties. Cubs, I like. Orioles, I like, as I mentioned. Matchups I don't like. These were tougher to find, but the Marlins and the Cardinals, something they have both have in common, they're facing the Nationals this week. Also don't like the Yankees, the Astros, or the Rangers. The Rangers, along with the Diamondbacks, play just five games. But since the Rangers are the ones with the worst matchups there, they're middle infield, not off to a great start. Elvis Andrews, Rougned Odor, probably sit them.
Would you sit Beltre, Scott?
No.
Okay.
Can't imagine doing it, unless it was a scenario where you drafted Chris Bryant and
Mike Moustakas.
I talked about how this is probably not a. If you were paying attention, Adam, I mentioned.
Well, Beltre's been horrible. Would you start Moustakas or Beltre?
No, not in a week the Royals are facing four lefties. Not in a week the Royals are facing zero lefties.
Okay,
wouldn't do that.
All right. Final thought.
Well, there is, if I can find it. Brandon Moss off to a dreadful start, and the Indians face three lefties. It's possible he doesn't play all those games, so he's a pretty easy choice to sit. And I'll just leave it at that. There's plenty more to read in the column or watching the video that will be at the top of the column when it comes out.
There you go. All right, Al. To start pitchers to pick up. You said it's a good week, huh?
Yeah, it is. So actually, I want to talk a little bit about one star pitchers just for a second because...
No.
No?
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
All right. because I think the threshold where you sit those guys raises a lot this week because there are some good two-star options on waivers. So just a handful of names to go over here. James Shields and Tyson Ross, their only starts are at Coors. Scott already talked about the Padres. Ross, I would definitely sit. Shields, push came to shove. I would actually sit him too, even though he's been really good so far this year. His most recent start there was last year. It was a quality start, 2 runs, but he gave up 9 hits. His only other start there was miserable. So very limited track record for Shields, but I just think there's so many better options with two starts that you could sit Shields. The one-start pitcher that's kind of in that range that I would definitely start this week is Scott Kazmir. He's got the Astros.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Would you start a two-start Wei-Yin Chen, 2 starts against Boston? He has a bad history against Boston.
Yeah, no, I'd skip Chen. And I mentioned there's a lot of pretty good two-start options. There's also a lot of kind of meh ones. So because you have your choice here, Chen would not make the cut for me.
Are there any studs or guys who are owned in 85% of leagues or more, let's say, that you would consider sitting this week with 2 starts?
85% or higher, probably not. I'm going to do the sort here just to make sure there's nobody I'd miss.
Pomeranz.
Let's see.
At the Angels, home against Houston.
I'm sorry, who?
Drew Pomeranz.
Pomeranz, yes. So, no, Pomeranz I would start.
All right, then. Who are we picking up this week?
Okay. By the way, I'm just looking because I've noticed Mike Fiers is on this list. And I'm not sure what changed overnight that gave him a second start, but I actually kind of liked him with 1 start. Really like him with 2. So there's that. But anyways, going deeper on the list, Willie Peralta is 73% owned, but only 41% started. I think that tells you something. And I would actually keep Peralta bench this week versus Cincinnati versus St. Louis. Not missing any bats so far. This is the guy I love this week, and he's still just 68% owned, A.J. Burnett.
Mm.
He's got the Cubs at home. He's got the Diamondbacks on the road. He's back, apparently, to being the Burnett that he was the previous 2 seasons that he spent with the Pirates, where he's pitching with much better control so far. And if you're a little suspicious of that because it's just the 2 starts, he's getting a lot more ground balls, and he's pitching with much less spin on his sinker. Like dramatically less spin on his sinker than he has in the past. That's going to make for a heavier sinker. I don't think there's any fluke there. There's greater vertical movement on the sinker so far. So I'm a big time believer in Burnett, and I think he's not just going to be a pitch and ditch guy, but you pick him up for the 2 starts and hopefully he performs well enough that you keep him.
I'm just going to throw out some names so we can go through the list here. CeCe Sabathia at Detroit, home against the Mets.
Nope.
Nathan Eovaldi at Detroit, home against the Mets.
Also no.
Wei-Yin Chen, we said no. Brandon Morrow, no. Justin Masterson, Baltimore and Baltimore.
Yeah, that's peculiar.
Hell no, we won't go.
I'll lean no there. We're getting warmer, though.
Wade Miley at Tampa Bay and at Baltimore.
I'm going no there, too, so I know I've said there's a lot of good options. We haven't gotten to them yet.
Kendall Graveman at the Angels, home against Houston.
Yes, like that one a lot. Very encouraged by the last start, despite the walks.
Sorry about that. Alfredo Simon, Yankees and Indians at home.
No, no, don't particularly like that one either.
Okay. Jonathan Neese, Atlanta and at the Yankees.
Yeah, I'm good with Neese.
Okay, you
Now it seems like you're going down the ownership list. I think did you skip over to Sclavani?
Yeah, I thought we had talked about him. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, just in case I didn't point it out earlier, I think he's a very good start this week.
Sclavani, 51% owned. But you'd rather have Burnett than Sclavani this week?
Yes.
All right. Anybody lower on the list? Burley, Vargas, Lincecum, Brett Anderson, Dan Haran, Matzik, Despaigne, Kyle Gibson, etc.
Yeah, unfortunately, Despaigne, he's got that Coors start too. So I would avoid him. But I like Heron this week. I like what he's done so far at the Marlins. He's got the Phillies. And, yeah, Heron gives up home runs, so Citizens Bank Park, not a great venue for him, but the Phillies aren't really doing anything offensively. And then he's back at home against the Nationals. So I really like this week for Dan Heron. I like Brett Anderson at San Francisco, at San Diego. In a points league, I kind of like these matchups for Kyle Gibson at KC, at Seattle. At KC. I know the Royals
are giving up the thing with Gibson is like, he could give up 8 runs. You know?
No.
It'd have to be a deeper league for me.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm in a couple of 12 team mixed points leagues and like I said, I don't really have room for Gibson in those. Deeper, I think he's a good pickup.
We're going to read some emails until Heath Cummings comes in to talk DFS, Daily Fantasy Sports, give you some lineup advice. Let's go to tweets and emails. First, Cody. Trade Madison Bumgarner, get Cole Hamels and J.D. Martinez. Grade the trade.
I like that because Mad Bum and Hamels are close enough. I will give that an A-.
I apologize, a little slow here. Turn the page.
No, just say A-. It's cool.
You'll
agree.
Yeah, actually it was A-.
See, I told you.
Nailed that one.
Go 22nd. 5-game Trumbo or 7-game Adam Eaton in a points league?
I will go...
that's tough.
Yeah, I don't like either of them. Let me look at the matchups real quick.
Okay, if you're making me pick, I'll take Eaton.
Me too.
From David, would you sit Starling Marte for Anthony Gose, or would you sit Elvis Andrews for Bogarts?
Might do Andrews for Bogarts in a points league. Probably not Roto where you need the steals. But no way I sit Marte for Gose.
Agreed on both counts.
Tommy, would you trade Chris Bryant for Anthony Rendon in a 12-team points league?
Oh, that is interesting.
Yeah.
Because Rendon, no timetable at this point.
Boy. Do it.
I Heath is saying do it.
Yeah, I would do it.
Giving away Bryant for Rendon?
Yeah.
I'd want a second player.
In a redraft league.
I'd want a second player. Sorry.
From Ross in Kansas City, grade the trade, 10-team Roto League, give Mike Trout, get David Price, Shane Green, and Carlos Santana. Give Trout, get Price, Green, and Santana.
I can't find this email. You skipped some emails.
Yeah, I skipped one.
Just listen. Use your ears.
That's a tough one. So Mike Trout. I'll be hearing him and Haw for a while. it's a very fair offer, but if I have Trout, I know I'm not doing this.
Agreed.
Grades.
C-.
Yes.
Also, please bring Heath on the show more. I love hearing about the Royals and his descriptions of burnt ends.
Boom.
So, there he is. In the flesh.
Heath.
Yes.
A lot of aces today. Let's make Heath a little louder. A lot of aces today. Who do you like? Who are you putting in our DFS lineup?
Well, I really like Max Scherzer, who in the article today that's not quite up, I referred to as the Charlie Brown of pitchers so far this year.
You blockhead.
I don't get that.
No. You know how Charlie Brown always is like almost ready to kick the ball and they pull it out from under him?
Oh.
Well, Scherzer's pitching like a complete stud, and then in the 7th or 8th inning, his defense or bullpen just screws it all up. He's given up one run in 13 innings, struck out 16 batters, and he's 0-1.
What if they like pulled the mound out from under him as he was getting ready to pitch?
That would probably cause an injury.
For the record, I wasn't calling Heath a blockhead. I hope that was clear.
Seems like he was.
That's how I interpreted
it. Nobody uses that word anymore.
I thought you were calling Max Scherzer a blockhead.
No, he was totally calling Keith a Heath.
Okay.
Keith.
I thought he was calling the Nationals' defense a blockhead.
That's what I was doing. Thank you, Heath.
My second favorite pitcher is Corey Kluber.
Yeah.
Kluber's also 0-1. He's not been quite as good as Scherzer, but he's still striking people out. He gets the Twins. That's great. Clayton Kershaw's the biggest favorite of the day. He's almost 12,000, and he's against the Rockies, while Scherzer and Kluber face the Phillies and Twins, so I'm going to have a hard time paying up for Kershaw.
Yeah. And I think Sonny Gray, you might want to avoid him just because strikeouts are so important. And he's facing the Royals, who have the fewest strikeouts in baseball. And Gray is like pretty much priced with those guys, the fifth most expensive starting pitcher.
Well, you know, I do mention Sonny Gray in the article just because my second favorite stack, and this would be my favorite stack if it weren't so expensive, is the Angels against Roberto Hernandez. But you just can't afford Kluber, Kershaw, Scherzer, and Mike Trout. And there's no reason to put an Angels stack together without Mike Trout.
Yeah.
So if you want to run that Angels stack out there, which, I mean, they could put up a big total against Hernandez, then I think you can afford them if you drop down to a guy like a Sonny Gray.
Heath, Scott, Al, I am getting kicked out of the studio. So I do apologize. Heath, what your other favorite stack today?
My very favorite stack of the day is the Red Sox against Ubaldo Jimenez. And my favorite bargain of the day, Mookie, is only $3,100 against Jimenez.
Okay. Heath Cummings, Scott White, Al Melchior, have a great weekend, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, you too, Adam.
You too.
All right, we'll see you later. We'll talk to you on Monday with the start of week 3.